Okay. So if we think about power within a cell, then your signal strength is going to be dependent on where you are in that cell, obviously. And what we'd like is that it's sort of the, what you receive signal strength, be uniform, no matter where you are. Okay. So when we were looking at power in a cell, we were looking at what you received at the edge of the cell. Now, things are not quite symmetrical within cells. You have the case of a user transmitting to a base station. That's one possibility, and then the other possibility is the base station transmitting to a user, or just sort of globally transmitting. Okay. So for instance, if the base station's sending a beacon signal, it's probably going to do it at the highest power, acceptable power level. Okay. As we said before, what we want is we want to obviously send at a sufficiently high level that we overcome noise. But we also want, beyond that, keep it at a minimum to reduce interference and save battery power. And finally, if you have a CDMA system, so where you don't have these sort of distinct channels, you would also like received power from from the mobile units to the base station to be at a constant level. And what that's going to mean is that depending where the mobile units are, they're going to have to transmit at different power levels. Okay. So, basically, transmit level is going to be determined by what we know of our channel. And so this could be done in either an open loop or a closed loop method. And so in particular, if the mobile unit is trying to decide at what level to transmit, it can either do this sort of without explicit feedback from the base station. In that case, what it's going to do is it's going to look at, again, beacons from the base station, and it's going to use the received strength then to try and decide, well, how far am I from the base station? And it will then set its transmit power inversely proportional to the received power. Okay, so the lower your received power, you're farther and farther, you're farther away from the base station, and you transmit at a higher power to compensate. This can be done sort of more precisely if that take measures of performance metrics, and so typically those decisions will be made by the base station, and it allows both base and mobile units to make power adjustments. But again, the goal will be to sort of keep
a uniform power level at the receiver. Okay. So this is particularly important in CDMA systems. Again, if you think about having your codes,
and if they're not completely orthogonal, which they probably aren't, then if one signal is received at a significantly higher strength, you can't necessarily mask it out through the code. So this is often referred to as the near-far problem. So users close to a base station will have a stronger signal than users farther away. And again, what you would like is for the users to, again, self-regulate. If you're close to a base station, you transmit at a lower level, and then if you're farther away, again, you transmit at a higher level to get your signal. And you can just, the channel inversion techniques will take care of that problem.
Sorry, the users that are close to the base station, are they causing interference for the base station picking up from the users that are further away, or is it they're causing interference problems for the users that are further away picking up the base station, or both?
It would primarily be they're causing problems for the base station reception, because again, you're getting one signal coming in very strong and then another signal coming in not nearly as strong. The strong signal is masking the weaker signal. Okay, and again, so this idea, you think about somebody at the edge transmitting at a higher power level. Well, that's great for the base station we're trying to communicate with. Unfortunately, that means you're also causing more interference in adjacent cells. So getting that balance correct is complicated and not that easy. Okay, so that's just a little note. Now we've decided somehow, or decided, given a certain signal to interference ratio, what our
cell, our cell cluster layout had to be. And so the next question becomes, well, how many users does that support?
So essentially what we have channels. We've got a certain number of channels, and
how many users then do we, are we able to cater for? Now this is an old problem. It's been around for as long as telephony has,
and
what we're going to do is look at sort of the basic solution, and again, that'll give us a feel for at least what the problem is and the solution. Okay. And so
if we're going to assume is that our cell has a fixed number of channels, and we have some population of users wanting to use those channels. But it seems intuitive, but it's not one-to-one. You don't have one user per channel, because the users aren't always going to be transmitting. They're not always going to be on their phones. So the way it works is that users, so statistically, use their phones a certain amount of time, and then because they're not always on their phones, we can accommodate more users than we have channels. So we're going to use what's called Erlang's theorem, which gives us a way of comparing the usage per user, the number of channels in the, well, the usage for multiple users, the number of channels in the system, and then give us an idea what's the likelihood of blocking of not being able to get a channel at any given time. And typically the way the telephone networks and cellular networks are provisioned is that you look at this probability of blocking, you set it at a certain level, you don't want to go above that, and you have some idea of how many users are in the system and how they're using their phones. So you say, well, how many channels do I need then? I've got this user behavior, and I only want to block,
1% of the time, 0.1% of the time. Okay.
It's slightly more complicated for cellular systems because you have movements between cells, but we're just going to ignore that.
Okay. Okay, so the first thing we need is a measure of usage.
And we call that measure of usage traffic intensity. And it's expressed in Erlang's.
And so one Erlang would mean that one channel would be kept busy all the time.
So there's a number of ways we can interpret that. So it's the average number of simultaneously busy channels. So if you have two Erlangs, that means that on average two channels are busy. It's the ratio of the time a channel is kept busy over, or the time the collection channels is kept busy over the total time. So just doing now a time average. Again, you can think of if two channels were kept busy the whole time, then you'd have two Erlangs. Or it's the number of calls which arrive while a single call is ongoing. Okay. And this one's handy because, yeah, you can calculate this one
more easily. Okay. So, suppose we have a calling rate of 20 calls a minute, and on average, the call persists, a given call persists for 3 minutes. Okay, so then using our last definition of load, we say that it's the number of calls requested during a single duration, so you get 20 times 6 times 3 is 60.
And that's the number of calls attempted during the duration of one call.
And so, again, you can think of that as, on average, you need 60 channels, or you can keep 60 channels busy. So that's an average. So the question is, what capacity then do we need in our system? Obviously, you need at least 60 channels. On average, you're going to need 60 channels. But again, if you think that things aren't arriving sort of smoothly, but, you know, sporadically, that means that sometimes you're going to have 80 calls in the system, sometimes you're going to have 90. So 60 is not going to account for those times. When you go over the 60, obviously you're going to experience rocking.
Do we have to account for different models of different arrival rates? Or for whatever we're doing, can we just assume this, give just some standard arrival rate?
Yeah, well, for what we're doing, we'll just assume that we've measured the arrival rate. Okay, so we'll assume that somehow we know what the load is on the system. And all we're doing is asking, so many channels and so much load, what's the blocking probability? So we're not going to do anything complicated. Okay, so you could double the number of channels, and what that would mean is that on average, only half of them would be used. So again, there's a cost to providing those channels. So you want to measure, weigh that cost. So you can never guarantee absolutely that you won't cause blocking. We assume all these things are statistical. You could just get everybody piling in at the same time and you just wouldn't have enough channels. What you'd like to do is allocate your channels so that the likelihood of that happening is less.
Okay.
So, typically, patterns change throughout the day. It used to be that things would be very quiet around midnight, but these days maybe not. Everybody's on their phones then, surfing the net or whatever, but typically what you can do is there's some characteristic usage, and there will be a busiest hour, okay, which we call the busy hour, and we would like to be able to accommodate traffic during that busy hour. We're trying to identify what the busiest period of the day is and then accommodate
traffic during that busiest period. So, I say, as long as you assume that these things are random, and they are random, then you can never make an absolute guarantee of access. Obviously, the more resources, the more channels, the better that guarantee is. Okay. So, trunking refers to giving a certain number of channels to a greater number of users. And so the channels are just, again, our multiplex, our FDMA, TDMA, CDMA as before. And if once we have more users than channels, then there's going to be some probability that you block, that you're not able to send your signal, or that you can't make your connection. What we're assuming is that if you can't make that connection, that you have to give up and try again. Okay, so that's, so we have what's called a loss system. Okay, and so what we would like to do is to cap the probability of loss. Okay. So the grade of service refers to the probability of obtaining a connection, or conversely, not being blocked. Having said that, we usually look at the probability of blocking. So obviously, it's just one minus the probability not being blocked is just one minus the probability of being blocked. And typically, again, there's within phone systems, there's a required grade of service. And so you're going to have to provision to maintain that. Okay. The Erlang B model relates the quantities of offered load, number of channels, and probability of blocking. And we're just going to use it. We're not going to derive it. We're not going to worry about what form it takes. There are a lot of probabilistic assumptions about sort of the nature of the statistics, the probability that distributions, but we're just going to assume that we fit all those and everything's fine. And so you can, once you've related these three components, you can start asking, well, if I know what my busy hour load is, and I have a required grade of service, how many channels am I going to need to accommodate that? If I have a fixed number of channels and a certain load, that's, we assume, fits the grade of service. If I increase that load, how will that impact on my grade of service, etc. So these results are, that's not actually easy to calculate, but the results, are, depending which one you want to, the P is easy enough to calculate, but if you want to fix P and vary either A or N, that's complicated.
But it's already been done for you, so tables and
or graphs that represent this model. Okay, so again, it's better to just look at the picture of the plot. And so, again, we're comparing our traffic intensity to the probability of blocking given a certain number of channels in each of these lines that is represents channels. So if we have a traffic intensity of 1 and the probability of blocking of 0.001, we see that we end up between 5 and 6. So you need 6 channels to make that guarantee. So that would be that point down here. Okay. Again, if you knew how many channels you had, 10, and you wanted to grade a service of 0.01, then again we can drop down and find a traffic intensity.
Okay, so again, this chart anyway is in a log scale.
I think when in the problem set, I actually give you a table, which is a little easier to look at. But okay.
So you can you can make these calculations, and we can also make some sort of general observations about the system. And the first general observation is that a large capacity system is more efficient than a small capacity system in giving a grade of service, or multiple small capacity systems in giving a grade of service. So we can just look at an example. We have 2 cells with 10 channels each. We can compare that to a single cell with 20 channels. So we can then fix a grade of service and say, well, how much traffic can that handle? Okay. So our grade of service is 0.002, and so we want to look at 10 channels, and what we see is that 10 channels gives us a traffic intensity of 3.4, and then 20 channels gives us a traffic intensity of 10, again, for that particular grade of service. And so, obviously, if we have 2 of these smaller cells, then we can double that traffic intensity.
Okay. So we get a combined traffic intensity of 6.8.
Using 20 channels split into 2 cells, where we get a traffic intensity of 10 if we keep the 20 channels in a single cell. Okay, yeah, that makes some, again, intuitive sense that you'd be better off because, well, what if everybody, you know, if you have 2 cells, what if everybody's back just sitting around in one of those cells, then you have channels going to waste in the other. cell.
Okay. Having said that, large capacity systems are more sensitive to increases in traffic. So, if we look at the impact of, if we look at how much traffic it takes to sort of decrease the rate of service by a certain amount, so we can drop from our grade of service of 0.002 to a grade of service of 0.1.
And again, taking a look at that,
we see, for our 10 channel system, the traffic intensity has to increase to 4.4 to cause that drop in grade of service.
Mm-hmm. So that's more than a 30% increase. For our second larger cell, so now we have 70 channels, and we see that we have a difference for
following the 70. Down for grade of service of 0.002, we have a traffic intensity of 51. For a grade of service of 0.01, we have a traffic intensity then of
56. And that's about a 10% increase in traffic intensity is giving us, again, that level of decrease. Okay. So, again, those are just competing factors when you're determining your capacity of the system. Okay. So, again, we
usually, the assumptions for the airline B, again, are based on a certain user behavior, and what is not accounted for is user mobility. So, for user mobility, your arrival rate changes because you have calls that start, but also calls that are being handed over. And also the call holding time, at least within a cell, is determined by, calls that spend their entire time in a single cell, and also calls that are split over multiple cells. So those issues are going to impact on the underlying assumptions and the underlying numbers that you use for these. Again, they get complex and frequently addressed through simulation models, not by direct calculation. But, again, for our purposes, we can just using these sort of basic rules of thumb, we can sort of at least see
roughly what's happening with the capacity of the system. Okay, so our last topic is just, again, we've got this basic system set up, and we've had a little bit of a look at capacity, which we assume is somewhat fixed by the number of channels within the system. So how do we sort of try and increase the capacity of the system? Okay. So within a cell, well, pretty much all we can do within a cell is try and somehow increase the number of channels. Well, either increase the number of channels in the cell or decrease the number of users in the cell. Okay. And
the idea of cell breathing in CDMA is the idea of decreasing the number of users. So you shrink if you've got too many users in a given cell, you try and shrink the radius of the cell so that they can transfer over to adjacent cells. Okay. Might be possible to do that within our basic system, but again, we're going to be sort of really messing around with the signal to interference ratio if you do. So another possibility is to try and again juggle the channels within the system, within clusters. Okay. And so the basic idea is that if certain portions of the system are more are busier, then somehow we want to get more channels into that part of the system. Okay. And we can do that by, again, taking our basic channel set and trying to move it around, or we can do that by changing the layout of the cells. And cell splitting refers to subdividing congested cells into smaller cells. So again, idea that if your cell radius is smaller, then you can fit more cells into a given area, and without changing the actual allocations, you've gotten a greater density of channels. Cell sectoring refers to dividing the cells into, are using directional antennas within the cells. This reduces interference and therefore can decrease the reuse factor and allow you to have less cells per cluster and therefore more channels per cell. And microcell zones, you've run away with a clever way of doing that. Cell sectoring, they change the orientation of the antennas to the cell and allow more flexible allocation of channels.
So we'll see how that works in a minute. Okay. So, again, you can think about trying to rearrange channels within cells, so give more channels to
cells that are busier, and in particular, if you're, say, within a single cluster, then it might be possible to keep track of all this. And again, if people are not even distributed within that cluster, then change around the number of cells per cluster. Don't divide them evenly. Okay. If your load is predictable, so you always know that at a certain time you're going to have a problem in a certain area, then it's pretty easy to do that assignment in an optimal fashion. If your load is less predictable, then you really need some sort of dynamic assignment. And so you'll want to have some way of temporarily changing the assignment. Okay. And so the problem basically with these techniques is that you can, you know, we know what the optimal is for just an evenly divided system, but if we allow sort of the channels to move within our cells, then for a certain, that can work up to a certain point, but eventually, if your overall utilization increases, then you have this situation where, well, you've taken your channels that serve this cell, but now this cell actually needs them. So you get into situations where you run into problems.
Okay. So the extreme of this sort of channel borrowing is dynamic channel assignment. So you only assign, you have a whole set of channels available, and you assign it on a call-by-call basis. The problem is that this, again, leads to eventually non-optimal channel assignments where you get into trouble. Okay, so, again, there's a lot of different combinations of these possibilities. Again, if you can do planning in advance, then you can work out the optimal allocations. If you try and do it dynamically, then you get yourself into situations where your allocations are non-optimal. Okay, and that's just sort of a summary of all the different possibilities, but and all of them are some flavor of sort of moving channels from one cell to another. Okay. So the other possibility is somehow change the cell structure itself. And we can increase capacity by shrinking the size of our cells without sort of changing anything else in the system. Okay, and again, what's the shrinking? If you shrink your cell size, then in any given area, you've sort of increased the number of cells in the area. Okay. So again, if we look at an example for our squares, if we shrink our radius, we have our radius, then we have sort of increased the number of cells in any given area. And so essentially, if you think of a channel density, so the number of channels over divided by the surface area, then you've increased your channel density. If you think about users being spread then over the surface area, what have you done? You've decreased the number of users in any given area, and so allowed them sort of more access to channels.
Okay, so every time we have our radius, we increase the system capacity by a factor of 4. Okay. So there's only so far that can go. Again, each cell is going to require base stations, and which has costs associated both with the equipment and with actually finding a place to put the cell. Also, handover becomes an issue. So as cell size decreases, if you're moving, then you're traveling from cell to cell to cell more rapidly. Okay. And the handover is not obviously instantaneous, so you have to do some work. And so if you make your zones too small, then you're going to be out of the zone before you even manage to accomplish your handover. Okay. So the last techniques we'll look at are cell sectoring and microcell zones. And again, we're going to try and change our antenna layouts in order to decrease our signal-to-interference ratio. Decreasing our signal-to-interference ratio means that we can potentially have less cells per cluster and therefore more channels per cell. Okay. So the idea of cell sectoring is that we divide, we use directional antennas, and we divide up the cell into wedges using those directional antennas. Okay. And so in our example, we have 3 wedges, and so your antenna is just radiating in a 120 degree sector. Okay. So what that does is it decreases the number of interfering cells. So in this case, we've decreased from 6 to 2. If we look at this cell sector, then this cell will interfere with it. This cell will interfere with it, but none of these 4 will.
So, the reuse factor is going to be dependent on this. Well, the signal to interference ratio is dependent on the number of interfering cells. So, we've decreased
this and should be able to improve, well, if we keep the signal to interference ratio static, then we can reduce our reuse factor. Okay, the cost of this is, well, we have more antennas and base stations. And now with cell sectoring, we divide the channels, the cell's channels up between each of the sectors. So you're not only doing handover between cells, you're also doing handover within the sectors. So again, you're having to do more handover. Okay. And again, this is going to decrease our efficiency unless our users are evenly spread throughout the cell.
We can take a similar idea and
so just again to look at how this factors in. Our signal to interference ratio is now 1 over 2 as opposed to 1 over 6. And that means that N is 2 SIR instead of 6 SIR. So then we reduce that factor. So again, we can work out N for the sectorized system versus N for your original system, and if we run numbers, say we have an SIR of 5, then for our sectorized system, NS is 4, so 4 cells per cluster. For the original system, it's 14 cells per cluster. Again, that means you have more channels per cell.
Okay, so there is an issue of handover. So microcell zones attempts to deal with that issue by changing the arrangement of the antennas. So instead of being in the center and radiating outwards, you put the antennas at the edge of your cell and radiate inwards. Okay. Doing that, because we're using directional antennas, you get the same signal to interference ratio pluses. But now all of the antennas can cover the zone, and therefore you don't you don't have to change channels as you move through the zone. Okay. So you eliminate the need for handover within a cell, and it also allows for better power control, which again we said was desirable. Okay. So those techniques all apply to our orthogonal systems. As I said before, for CDMA systems, the main technique to use is what's called cell breathing. And so you essentially decrease the radius of your cell to reduce the number of users within a given cell. Okay. So that's it for today. Just about on time here. I leave you with a problem just to even think about. And so again, this looks at this idea of cell sectorization. We can determine the sort of the configuration of our cells, or the configuration of our clusters, I should say. And then, given a certain number of channels to divide up, we can look at the capacity that we get out for each of the different arrangements. So we'll take up with, have a look at that, think about it. We'll take up with that problem and next time, and then we'll start looking at sort of the cellular implementation. So look at some topics in 2G through 4G systems. Okay, so I will see you guys next week.